to Side.
Spend the day with Side. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Sai, dear listeners, a warm good morning and welcome to all of you. But today I'm not welcoming you to the Radio Sai answering booth. For today it's not going to be centered around a question and answer. Due to some reasons I could not deal with a question today, but not to disappoint all of you, I'm going to try and play for you some content which is fresh. Sometime towards the end of last month, a retreat was organized by Zone 6 of the Shri Satya Sai organizations in Canary Islands in Spain, and they invited a few of us to participate and address the audience through a video call. And I had the privilege to be in that team. And I spoke on the value of being a part of Shri Satya Sai Seva organization. So I thought I will share with you today the talk I had given on that occasion. Just a point, this talk was translated live into Spanish for the benefit of the audience. So what I'm playing for you is the talk with the translations edited out. So if you feel there is something odd in the way the talk is delivered, it could be because of the translations being edited out. Nevertheless, I hope you find this talk useful. And I would love to know what you think about it, or if you have any question that's based on what I'm saying, I would be happy to address them. As always, you can send me your comments and your questions to my mail ID, prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. After this talk, I'll play for you another of my favorite songs, the way I do always on this show. But do join me again for next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth at 11 a.m. the next week. For now, happy listening. I offer my loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. I pray to Swami that He gives us all the understanding, that He alone is the one who speaks, and it is He who is listening through all of us. To all the elders, sisters and brothers, Sairam to all of you from Prashanthi Nilayam. We had a huge storm here last night, and we're expecting another one this night too. So let's just hope that it doesn't take away the power, and we can continue with the satsang. Many years ago, I think sometime in the 1990s, Swami came a little earlier than He usually does in the morning. And Swami went into the interview room and called for the research scholars from the university. There were about seven of them, and Swami had come unusually early. And those were the days when we did not have cell phones around, so the word had to be sent to the hostel, and the boys had to get ready and come quickly. So these boys came running in, and word was left that they can come straight into the interview room. But as they entered the interview room, they realized that Swami was quite withdrawn, His eyes were closed, and He looked quite distant. So one by one, they all went into the interview room and sat around Swami quietly without disturbing Him. And Swami sat like that, quiet, with His eyes closed, for something like 45 minutes. And they didn't know what to do. It was a beautiful morning, twilight time, and they were all alone with Swami, and Swami was eyes closed, like a statue, sitting there. So they were just sitting there and enjoying the beautiful darshan. After 45 minutes, Swami opened His eyes, looked around if everybody has come. Then again He closed His eyes. Then after about 5 minutes, Swami opened His eyes, and then Swami looked, quote unquote, normal. He was fine now. Then Swami asked the boys, "What day is it today?" And they said, "Swami, it's a Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever the day was." And Swami said, "Not the day, I want what date is it today?" And one of the boys told Swami, "Swami, today is the 6th of August." Then Swami asked them, "What is the significance of today?" They thought for some time, they were wondering what was that landmark event in Swami's life that Swami is referring to. Then they kept quiet because they couldn't think of anything that was special about 6th of August. Then Swami went on to say, "Today is the day on which the nuclear bomb was dropped on the town of Hiroshima." And Swami said, "Right now, in the town of Osaka in Japan, there is a prayer meeting being held." Swami went on to describe that prayer meeting. He said, "Thousands of people are sitting, they are holding candles in their hand, and they are praying to God that such a catastrophe should not happen to any other country." And then Swami very casually said, I had been there to their prayer meeting to receive their prayers. This was not a gathering of the Satyasai organization, and these were not a gathering of Swami's devotees. They were just citizens of this town who had come together to pray for this beautiful prayer that, you know, such a thing should not happen to any other race or any other country. They were praying to their own gods, they were praying to their own deities, but Swami was saying that I had been there to receive all their prayers. Isn't it interesting that we all are gathered here under the auspices of the Sri Satyasai organization, and we believe that this is the best way that we can serve Swami, we can be a part of Swami's glory. But here was Swami saying that wherever you may be, to whichever deity or god you may be praying, all that prayer reaches me. So one might wonder, what is the value of being a part of the Sri Satyasai organization? Many years ago, probably about 10 years ago, we had the opportunity to speak to one of the people who had come as a patient to the hospital in Bangalore. And this person had a very fascinating story to narrate of how he ended up being a patient in the hospital here. He was himself a doctor actually, and he was a doctor in one of the poorer states in India, the state of Odisha. And in the state of Odisha, there is one deity, they call her Mother Sarala. She's one of the many deities, you know, we Indians worship a lot of gods, so she is one of those deities. And this man was very, very devoted to that form of divinity, right? So he was saying that it was not just a relationship between a god and devotee in the sense of he going and making prayers in the temple. He said, I literally felt that she was my mother. And this man came from a very ordinary background. His father was a farmer, his brother was a tailor. So he worked really hard and he studied well. He earned his own way through education and he became a doctor. So this man, after he became a doctor, he decided that he should be of service to the community. So he set up his practice not in a city, but in a very small town, and he would charge something like 5 rupees for a consultation, which was something like 10 times lesser than what his colleagues were charging. But what would happen is, he was not rich himself, so especially whenever he had to administer some medicine which was expensive, he would tell the villagers to procure the medicine and he would administer it for them. But sometimes he would have the medicine, but he would still insist that they get the medicine, because otherwise once he treats them, there will be no way he can recover his money back. So one day it happened that late in the evening, when he was closing his clinic, one man came to him with a chronic stomach pain. So this man had the injection that the patient needed, but he told him that you get me the injection from the shop and I'll administer it to you. So this man goes away disappointed, the patient, and that night this doctor has a dream in which the deity that he was worshipping, Mother Sarala, appeared. And she appeared very upset with this doctor. And she said, why did you send that patient away? And then she said, did you know that he was very, very critical and he was about to die tonight, that I had to go and save him? And then very lovingly she told the doctor, look, I did not make you a doctor for this. I made you a doctor so that you can serve my children. So this doctor, who is already pretty philanthropic by nature, after this incident became even more sensitive to the needs of the people in his town, and many a times he would serve them without taking any fees. He would treat them at any time in the night, and especially patients who come to him in the night, he would never turn them away. So one day what happened is, his practice was going on well, but suddenly he realized that he was getting breathless and he was getting a very, very severe chest pain. So the next day he went to the nearby city, and he got himself diagnosed, and the doctors told him that he had a very, very complicated heart disease. And they told him that you cannot get treated anywhere else but the capital of the country. There is an institution called All India Institute of Medical Sciences. That's like the premier medical institution of India. So they said, that's the only place that can treat you because your problem is very complex. And he realized that the treatment would cost him something like 1 million rupees. And there was no way he's going to be able to afford that, because he has been such a philanthropic doctor. He's been taking such less amount of fees from his patients. But he was a young man. He had a young wife. He had a six-month-old child. So he had to do something to get treated. So he decided to do whatever he could. He wanted to sell his house. He wanted, his wife's parents wanted to sell their house and give him the money. And they finally decided that he will go to Delhi. And his tickets were booked to go to Delhi. And 3 days before he was scheduled to leave for Delhi for his treatment, he was sleeping and he had another beautiful dream. He was lying on his bed, and this time it was not Mother Sarala who came to his dream, it was our beloved Swami who came to his dream. Swami lovingly sat by his bedside and started caressing his hair. And Swami most lovingly told him, "You have served my children for so long, you have taken care of my poor children. Why do you want to go to Delhi?" And Swami told him, "Come to my hospital, I will get your operation done free." And this man got up, he was sweating profusely, he was in a shock, he didn't know what happened. He was not a devotee of Swami, he had just heard of Swami, he had just seen a picture of Swami, he had not read about Swami. But he was so surprised to see Swami in his dream coming and telling that, "You took care of my children, I will take care of you." And when he got up and he told his family the dream, everybody laughed at him. But nevertheless, he managed to convince them, and he cancelled his tickets to Delhi and he booked his tickets to Puttaparthi. And imagine, the day before he leaves for Puttaparthi, Swami again comes in his dream. And this time Swami tells him, "See, the hospital in Puttaparthi has a very, very long line. So if you go there, you will not be able to get operated for many months." So Swami told him, "You come to Bangalore, I have another hospital there, you can get treated there." And this man in all his innocence said, "Swami, do you have another hospital in Bangalore too?" And Swami told him, "You live in a small village, you don't read anything, you don't know anything about me. Of course I have a hospital in Bangalore, you come there, I will get you treated." And that is how he eventually came to the hospital, got treated, got completely cured of his ailment. And what a beautiful way for him to realize that that Mother Sarala that he was worshipping was actually our beloved Swami. So now every prayer that you make reaches him. Every good work that you do in any deity's name reaches him. So it again brings us back to the question, what is the sanctity of being in a Satyasai organization, doing service through the medical camps of the Satyasai organization, or coming together in Sai centers and praying to this particular form of Satyasai? So is it that we all can go home and worship whichever deity we want? And of course we can. When Swami had visited East Africa in 1968, during one of the public meetings there, one of the devotees were asked to speak. And this devotee made a statement. He said, "Swami, the Sai family is growing. And now the Sai family includes even the African race." When Swami spoke after this, he was very, very upset with the statement that this man had made. And then Swami said, "What Sai family do you speak about?" Swami said, "The whole universe is my family." And then Swami said something very profound. He said, "I am Sanatana come as Nutana," which means, "I am the eternal which has come as the new." Here is Swami who is saying that, "I am eternal, I am beyond time, I am beyond space." And it is very important to realize, when we say that Swami is a descent of divinity, he is an avatar, what it actually means. When Swami said he is the eternal, here is a being which is beyond the continuum of time and space. And when he enters a human body, he enters this phase, this plane which is defined by time and space. And when we say that Swami lived in a physical form for 86 years, it means that which was eternal packed itself into earthly 86 years. And when we say eternal, it is infinity, and that means every moment of Swami was actually infinitely potent. And when we say that the eternal has come in a human form, every second that this avatar spent was equal to eternal potency or eternal power. So 1 minute that Swami spent is millions and millions of times more than your 1 minute and my 1 minute. There's a saying which they say, it's a very interesting one, where they tell that if you give a gift to somebody, you give them a gift. But if you give somebody your time, you are giving a part of your life to them. Because our life is made of time, and every person and every activity to which we give a little bit of time, we are actually giving a little bit of our own life to that activity or person. And now when you say that here was this being which was Sanatana, eternal, and which came in a form which was limited in time and space, and now when you look back, how much of Swami's time was invested in what we call the Sri Satya Sai organization? So in that sense, literally, not figuratively, literally Swami has ingested his own life into the Sri Satya Sai organization. You know, when we were students in the university, you all would have seen that sometimes Swami comes and speaks to some students, sometimes Swami calls a batch of students for interviews, right? So one of our lecturers gave us this explanation of what it means when Swami comes and gives a part of his attention to you. He would say this, that here is this supreme consciousness which is limitless, and that consciousness is concentrating on you for those few moments. And when that happens, he would say that that is the most precious moment where you can progress spiritually million times faster than you would probably do in millions of lifetimes. And we would often compare this to probably when you use a magnifying glass to focus the lights of the sun to burn a piece of paper. We all would have done that as children, right? So that is what happens when Swami concentrates his focus on anything, any person or any organization. Well, it doesn't matter how many minutes you have got of Swami, or how many minutes Swami spoke to me or spent with me. What matters is how much of importance I give to that, and that much I can draw out of that few minutes with Swami. Now when you look at it, the Satya Sai organization has got so much of Swami's attention, be it Balvika students, SSC teachers and organizations. Swami has spent hours and hours and hours speaking to each one of these people. In the earlier years, in the 60s and 70s, Swami used to speak to every Sai Center's members separately. Swami used to give an interview for 45 to 1 hour. And Swami would tell them every small detail of how the organization has to be run. How do you do bhajans? How do you do seva? How do you have meetings together? How often do you meet? So here is this being whom Swami says that every prayer from any part of the globe reaches me. Any good work done anywhere under any banner reaches me. And he was giving so much importance to an organization which he had created. So when we all come into the organization, there are two things that we must do. The one thing is, remember always that Sri Satya Sai is not the Sri Satya Sai organization alone. But still remember what a grand opportunity the Sri Satya Sai organization is, and work in it, always remembering that this is only one aspect of Swami. The organization is not perfect. I'm not telling the organization is perfect. The members in the organization are not perfect. You and I are examples for that. But the intention with which the Satya Sai organization was started was as perfect as perfection can be. Because when Swami created the Satya Sai organization, he repeatedly said, I have nothing to gain from the organization. I am creating this purely for your benefit. And when you always remember that this is an organization started by divinity itself, the way you look at service will completely change. Why is that so? I'll tell you. We go out to, say, feed the poor. But isn't this Swami the one who has actually created hunger itself? And isn't it this Swami who has created all food itself? But he has created hunger, he has created hungry people, and he is giving us an opportunity to go and participate in his service. When Swami was setting up the first super speciality hospital in Puttaparthi in 1990, Swami had announced that this is going to be a heart hospital which is going to do specialized heart surgeries. So there was this one doctor from the United States. His name was Dr. Ram Bala. He one day got a call from one of his senior teachers. He was something like a mentor to him. So this doctor was going to Puttaparthi to help a team of doctors set up the hospital. So he called Dr. Bala and said, you know, I am going to Puttaparthi for this purpose. I want you to be a part of the team. So come over to India. So this doctor was really not so devoted to Swami, but he could not refuse his mentor. So he came to India, he became part of that team, and Swami one day called him for an interview. The interesting thing is, after he came to India, he realized that he was having some kind of discomfort. And being a doctor, he diagnosed himself to have some kind of a heart ailment. So he was wondering, how is he going to be of service in this construction of the hospital when he himself seems to be unwell? So he was sitting in the interview room when Swami called all the doctors, and Swami looked at him and told him, you are a doctor, but you yourself are a patient. And this doctor was surprised because he had not disclosed his ailment to anybody, even to his mentor. And Swami told, don't worry, you'll be fine. And being a doctor, he very well knew that he was having a failing heart, and that was the last time he ever had a heart pain. You see the paradox of the whole thing. Here is a doctor, a professional, an expert who has come to set up this hospital for heart patients in a third world country, being cured in few minutes inside that interview room. He must have wondered, why have I been called all the way when this Satya Sai Baba can cure people in a trice? And this is what we always have to remember whenever we do anything under the banner of Sri Satya Sai. Always remember that this Sri Satya Sai can do anything. He can satisfy hunger without food. He can give you health without a surgery. He can do anything. And still, he is giving us an opportunity to do his work. And this is the greatest opportunity for this soul to progress on its spiritual journey. And it will make progress which cannot be achieved in hundreds and hundreds of births. I'd like to share with you something, a small experience that happened 2 years ago in Radio Sai itself. A colleague and myself, we were doing a program on the radio for children. It was called Radio Sai Children's Hour. So we would share on radio some advice which Swami would give children, and we would tell some chinnakathas and stories which Swami would relate in his discourses. So one day we had narrated this story of a little boy who was a single child of a mother who had lost her husband. So this child, whenever he had to go to school, he had to cross a small jungle all alone and go to school. And being a little child, he was very scared, and he told his mother, I can't go to school, I'm very scared to walk through this jungle. So the mother tells this little boy, don't worry, you have an elder brother, and that elder brother's name is Krishna. She was referring to Lord Krishna and trying to give courage to this child. So the mother told this little child that whenever you are scared, call out to your elder brother Krishna and he will come and protect you. And the next day this boy goes to school as usual, and when he crosses the jungle, he starts hearing some weird noises. So this boy was scared, and as promptly taught by his mother, he called out to his elder brother Krishna. And this is the story that Swami would narrate, that Krishna comes in the form of a little boy, and every day from then on, he would walk this little child to his school past that jungle. So this was the story that we narrated during this Children's Hour program. So about a week later, we got a feedback mail. And the mail was from a 7-year-old kid. And this kid was from United States, and he was saying, I loved that story that you told on radio. But then he had written, but I have 3 questions. He said, the first question is, I am not the only child at home. Can I still call out to Krishna? And I go to school by the school bus. Can I still call Krishna? And there is no jungle anywhere near my house. Where do I go and call Krishna? And this was a 7-year-old child with all his purity and innocence asking these questions so genuinely. And when we got this mail, we were absolutely lost. We didn't know what to answer this child. So me and my colleague who are doing this program, we are sitting together and discussing, and casually as part of the conversation, we were telling each other, only Swami can answer this child because these questions are so difficult. So we did give him an answer, but we were not convinced of the answers ourselves. So this boy didn't reply after that for some time. So we thought, all right, maybe he's convinced, or maybe he's feels that we don't have the answers, so no point in asking again. And about a month later, this boy again wrote to us. And just to look at the mail, we could make out that he was very, very happy because there were so many icons and the big highs and sidearms and all of that. This boy said that I had gone to India for my summer vacation, and one night in a dream, Swami came to me. And this boy looked at Swami and he was so excited. He said, "Ah, Swami, have you come to see me?" And Swami looked at this little boy and said, "No, I have come to answer your questions." This boy, in all his innocence, looks at Swami and says, "Swami, but how did you know?" And then Swami explained to this little boy, "You asked those boys in Radio Sai, but they didn't know the answer to your questions. And they told me, Swami, only you can answer this boy." And Swami said, "That is why I have come to answer your questions." The saddest part is, that boy never shared the answers with us. But you know, that boy said, "I'm very, very happy. I've got all my answers. I'm so very happy." I mean, imagine what would be our plight when we look at this. Here we have a huge studio set up. We have a number of computers, and we are thinking that we are spreading Swami's message. But he actually never needed any one of us to spread his message. You know, in 2001, when Swami inaugurated this very studio I'm sitting in, and very, very interestingly, Swami was sitting at the very place I'm sitting right now. Just that same place where his chair was. When Swami was talking to the boys who were here, Swami told them, "I have nothing to gain from this whole Radio Sai setup. I only hope that you use this to progress spiritually for your own good." And this is something which we are seeing every day. Swami does not need a radio. Swami does not need a website. Swami reaches out to everyone whom he wishes to reach out to. And in the same way, Swami does not need a Shri Satya Sai organization. Swami does not need volunteers. Swami does not need you and me to go and talk about Swami to anyone. But the people who really need it are you and me. The organization is for you and me. The problem is, many of us are really not very keen about our spiritual progress. But there is a certain amount of goodness in each one of us, and we all have a little bit of compassion, isn't it? And Swami uses that compassion to make us go to the people who need, but actually in the process, Swami is giving us an opportunity to progress spiritually. There's this beautiful story of a small boy who's living in a village. He was a mischievous boy, and like all of us when we were children, his mother had a very difficult time to ensure that he maintained cleanliness. The mother would tell this child that every time before you come for food, you must wash your hands, but this boy would never follow that. So behind their home, in the village where they were staying, there was a river flowing downstream. So the mother one day calls this boy and tells him very seriously, "You know what, the village which is there downstream doesn't seem to be getting enough water. And it's all getting dried up and they're feeling thirsty and there is no water for their crops." And this boy became very concerned and he asked his mother, "Is there anything I can do?" And the mother told him, "Nothing. Every time before you come home for lunch and dinner, go to the river and push some water downstream with your hand." And every day from then on, this boy would sincerely, before coming home for lunch, go to the river and push some water downstream. The boy would think that he is doing a favor to the village downstream without realizing that actually his hands were getting cleaned. And that is precisely what happens to all of us when we do any small work in Swami's name, thinking that we are expressing our compassion. The process is actually happening to us. We are becoming cleaner, we are becoming purer. And that is why when we do work in Swami's name, in the Satya Sai organization, it is very important to do such work that makes us purer and us progress more. If the work is what is important, then Swami would have said, "I want more work." But Swami always said, "I want quality and not quantity." So Swami said, it is not how much work you do, but how much that work does to you. So what is important to ensure that the work happens that way is to keep aside what we think is the best way to do that work and try as much as possible to do the work the way Swami wanted us to do it. And Swami's ways are not easy, definitely not easy. Swami would say, I don't want any fundraising. I don't want anybody to go around asking people for money, saying that we are doing this project. Swami tells us that you invest your purity and your unity into the work you do, and I will ensure the resources come to you. So the first investment that we need to make is our sacrifice, not anything more. And it's literally a challenge. Swami is saying that try this experiment. It works. I know it works. When Swami was once talking to a youth group from India, these boys had come after doing a lot of seva. So Swami was talking to them. Swami was very happy with them. And in the course of that conversation, Swami made a very, very beautiful point. Swami said, if 10 of you boys come to Swami and say, Swami, each one of us have built a road in a village, Swami will be happy. But if 10 of you come to me and said, Swami, together we have built only one road, Swami will be much more happy. So Swami was clearly saying that I am not interested about how much you do, but I am more interested in how you do it. And how to do it has only one very simple way, and that is through our devotion. And that should express as whatever we do, you know, we gather for bhajans, we gather for a study circle. Can we constantly ask ourselves, how would Swami want this event to be done? You may get 10 answers for this, 10 different answers from 10 different people. You may never be able to come to a conclusion of how Swami would have wanted this to be done. It really does not matter. What matters is we must always ask, how would Swami want us to do? At the end of all the deliberation, we might do it completely wrongly, but it really doesn't matter. What matters is we must ask what Swami likes. If we don't do that, then we are not drawing the complete benefit of the Shri Satya Sai organization that Swami has created. I will end with probably a reference to the Ramayana. I hope you will be able to follow the characters whom I name. In the Ramayana, there is this character called Hanuman. He is supposed to be the greatest devotee of Lord Rama. The Ramayana is broken into six parts or six chapters. And we all know that the Ramayana is the story of Lord Rama, but there is one chapter in the entire Ramayana where Rama does not feature at all. And that chapter is called Sundara Kandam or the beautiful chapter. So imagine there is the story of Lord Rama, but the chapter in which he does not appear at all is said to be the most beautiful one. And the reason for that is this entire chapter is actually what Hanuman does when he goes on a mission that is given to him. And through that entire chapter of the Ramayana, Hanuman is constantly asking himself, if Lord Rama was here, what would he do? And every time he met a person, every time he faced a problem, every time he had a challenge, he was only asking himself this one question, what would Rama do or what would Rama want me to do? And because of that nature and that act of Hanuman, this chapter where physically Rama was not there became the true Ramayana. So much so that even if you cannot read the whole Ramayana, they say if you read this one chapter, it gives you the benefit of reading the entire Ramayana. And that is the power which is invested in each devotee of Swami. Can we do what Hanuman did by constantly asking, what would Swami want me to do? And when we do that, it really does not matter if physically Swami is here or not, because this becomes more important and potent than the physical face of Swami itself. So that is the opportunity that Swami has given all of us. That is the opportunity he has created for us through the Shri Satya Sai organization. So to summarize whatever I said, first of all, let us always remember that Shri Satya Sai organization is not equal to Shri Satya Sai. Shri Satya Sai is much, much, much larger than we can even comprehend. And even as we work in the Satya Sai organization, understanding how important it is, we must be able to reach that state where we go beyond the Shri Satya Sai organization. Swami would tell one small chinakatha about an old man who was planting a mango tree. A young man comes by and asks this old man, "Grandfather, what are you doing?" So when he tells, "I'm planting a mango tree," the young man starts laughing. And the young man says, "Don't you realize that by the time this tree grows and gives mangoes, you wouldn't be around to eat them?" And then the old man says, "My son, I'm quite old and I've eaten enough mangoes all my life." I am planting this mango tree so that you can enjoy the mango. In the same way, can we work in the Sri Satya Sai organization completely realizing that Sri Satya Sai organization is only a means, but foster it with all our love and all our attention so that somebody down the line will benefit from it? And that is what we all need to do. So I've actually finished my talk. How much time do we still have? Okay, if I have 2 minutes, I'll share one more small incident. So the incident I wanted to share is actually very profound, and it happened in Vrindavan. One Swami was invited for a public function. So Swami had taken along with him a few students. And whenever we would accompany Swami for any of these functions, we used to be fed very, very well. So that evening, after Swami returned to Trai Vrindavan, the same set of boys whom Swami had taken along with him were sitting around Swami. And Swami was talking about the events that happened in the morning. And there was one boy in the group who was looking very sad and melancholic. So Swami noticed it, and Swami started cracking a few jokes to make him laugh. And this boy was a little plump and very, very fond of food. So Swami even tried speaking about food for some time. So Swami found that even speaking about food did not cheer up this boy. So Swami said, "Your something is seriously wrong." So Swami looked at this boy and said, "Tell me, what is the problem? What are you so thoughtful about?" And this boy said, "Swami, this morning when we went to the function, there were thousands and thousands of people waiting to have a glimpse of Swami." And he said, "There were VIPs, there were ministers, there were a lot of people desperately wanting to come close to Swami." And this boy said, "Swami, all of them have so much hope on Swami because there are so many troubles in the world." And he said, "Swami, they all have so much hope on Swami, and Swami places all his hope on us." So then this boy said, "Swami, I'm suddenly feeling so burdened. How are we going to live up to the expectations of all these people? There are billions of people in the world, and we are so few." And he said, "Swami, I'm very, very worried about that. How are we going to perform?" In response to that, Swami gave a very weird and simple answer. Swami said two words. Swami said, "Don't care." And this boy was very troubled with that answer. He said, "Swami, how can you say don't care? Swami, I'm so very troubled about this thought, and you are just brushing it aside by saying don't care." And then Swami said, "Don't worry about all that. I have only a very simple work for you. You take to your heart all that Swami has told you all this while. You know what Swami expects. You only have to live according to that." And then Swami said, "When you live like that in society, there will be some fellow who will look at you and say, 'Hey, I want to be like him.' To make that fellow think like that is my duty. So your duty is only to live according to what Swami expects of you. My duty is to ensure that somebody will look at you and say, 'I want to know how he's living like that. I want to live like that.'" So that is all Swami expects of us. And the simplest thing that Swami would always say is, "Be so happy that people will be curious what's wrong with you." And that's all we need to offer to Swami. Just be happy through life and do what Swami wants us to do. Thank you all for your very patient listening. Sai Ram.
Oh my Sai, 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 oh my Sai. Hold on to me, never let me go. Hold on to me, never let me go. Oh my Sai, oh my Sai, oh my Sai. Hold on to me, never let me go. Hold on to me. Never let me go. Oh, my sigh. 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 Oh my sigh, 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 sweet such a sigh, oh my sigh. Sweet such a sigh, oh my sigh, oh my sigh, oh my sigh. Let me always be devoted to you. Let me always be devoted to you. Sigh, oh my sigh, oh my sigh. Let me always be devoted to you. Let me always be devoted to you. Oh my sigh, oh my sigh. Sweet such a sigh, oh my sigh. Sweet such a sigh, oh my sigh. Oh my sigh, oh my sigh. Oh my sigh. Sweet such a sigh, oh my sigh. Sweet such a sigh, oh my sigh. Oh my sigh, oh my
Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
करता पूरक निरपार निर्वैर अकाल मूरत अजोनी से भंग गुरु प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु गोविंद गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु भगवंत गुरु मेरा पार ब्रह्म गुरु भगवंत
Gopal Jai Jai Govind Jai Jai 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 Gopal Jai Jai Govind Jai